Today is December 10th, 2021. This is episode number 563, the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. You may hear my assistant today, that would be Commander Ichabod, busily chewing a nyla bone, very, very loudly right behind me. So if you can't hear that, I apologize. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, except Commander Ichabod's bone chewing, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group. And as the kids say, boom! It's Jeff Gamet.
Boom! It's Brian Chaffin.
That's what the kids say, man. I have a very good authority.
You know, every time I'm standing out on my lawn with the milkshake, the kids come by and say boom. So, yeah, you're right.
You know, you could probably keep those kids off the lawn if you just didn't have the milkshake.
You're probably right. I'll have to try that one of these days. I need to work on that, though. Hey, you kids.
There you go. All right. Today, by the way, this episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to be telling you more about that later in the episode. But first, Jeff, I'm actually, as I often do on the show, I'm going to use it to learn something from you. And you're going to tell us about Matter. And I can't wait to find out more.
Okay, so the more things change, the more they stay the same?
Yes, very much so.
Yes. All right, so Matter, in the sense that you want to know about, actually relates to smart home devices. Whereas other people would be thinking about, you know, like Matter, like we are made of matter.
We can sure, turn this that's into what philosophical most people thing
if you want.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So here's the deal. You've probably been hearing about Matter a lot over the past at least year or so. And I say you've probably been hearing about it a lot because it turns out that that you are at Mac Observer. And you are surrounded by people that are talking about technologies all the time. And it turns out that Jeff Butts talks about it a lot.
He does. Yeah. He's been following it pretty closely for us. But I still want to know about it.
Okay. So here's the deal. You have all the smart home technology and most people have a lot of smart home technology that they can't get all the pieces to talk to each other. And I excluded you from that group because you're one of the people that that very intentionally looks for HomeKit compatible stuff.
Yeah, preferably HomeKit only.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they're looking for the thing that does what they need. And that means that it may not support the smart home platform that they want to use, so they need to use it with a different smart home platform.
So they might end up having multiple, they might have Alexa and Apple's HomeKit / Siri or Google Home or one of the other ones all in the same household.
Right. And I, in fact, say some things to the A lady and some things to the S lady to control the A lady platform devices versus the HomeKit platform devices. Yeah. So this is a thing and it's something that we need a standard. And so that's where Matter comes in. And Matter is a common platform or protocol that all smart home devices will use. So then it doesn't matter what your smart home platform of choice is, the devices will just work. And Apple has signed on with this. They're on whatever you want to call it, the consortium, the gang, and Google, they're on board as well. And Amazon is on board. And so you've got the big names that are backing this platform now.
So,
or this spec.
Whether or not your smart home device is a wiretap or a device that you have to train yourself to use, or if it's Apple HomeKit, they can basically all interoperate. So what you're saying is, like, I would be able to command Siri to control this device even if it's an Alexa device because it supports Matter? Or is that not quite the way to think about it?
Oh my God, I love that you asked that question that way because you gave us a lot to unpack.
Excellent. Yay me.
So yay.
Let's
yay
pretend
you.
By okay. the way that we planned that.
Oh yeah, we totally planned it because top men.
Yeah.
Okay. So remind me if I forget to talk about the voice part, then I need to talk about the voice part.
Okay.
So all of the devices that you're adding to your smart home, these devices need to have Matter support built in. And when they do that, then it's not a case of can I control this A lady device with the S lady? It's, does this device work with the smart home controlling platform that I choose?
That makes a lot of sense.
So think of it more like HomeKit versus Google Home versus, and of course, Amazon named everything the same versus A lady.
So I'm not adding an Alexa device to my smart home network. Instead, I'm adding a device that's going to support HomeKit, but if I was Alexa instead, it would be then supporting it would support Alexa.
A-Lady. Exactly.
Sorry, yeah. for everyone who has a device at home, I apologize.
And everyone at home, don't worry. We're still working on getting Brian trained on saying A-Lady, G-Lady, and S-Lady all the time.
I'm going to get it down any day now.
Yeah, well, if you don't, you're going back in the crate. And now all the dog lovers are like, we hate you, Jeff. Anyhow, so yeah, this is about finding that lowest common denominator to allow any of these devices to work on the platform of your choice. Now, for consumers, this is good because that means when you go to Best Buy or Target or Home Depot or wherever it is that you go and find smart home controllable devices, you don't have to read the packaging to make sure that you're getting one that actually works with your platform of choice.
Well, but you do need to read the packaging to make sure that it supports Matter.
Okay, so yes. So what I mean is, ultimately, you won't need to worry about that. Because in theory, all these smart home devices that you can go and buy will have Matter support built in. Everything you're buying today, I take that back. Most everything you're buying today isn't going to have Matter support, but there's stuff out there that does. Because, yeah, and really, we're not going to see any widespread adoption happening until sometime in 2022. And honestly, I think that's when it's going to just like start being a thing, and we'll see it ramp up over a couple years. And then we'll start seeing where, like, basically everything that comes out has Matter support built now, in.
Do you know how, like, for instance, the Philips Hue lights require their own little Philips Hue hub?
Mm-hmm.
And there are other smart home brands that require something along those lines. Will Matter obviate that? Like, if Philips Hue supported Matter, would you no longer, excuse me, if Philips supported Matter with their Hue product line, would you no longer need to run a Hue bridge / hub to run Hue light bulbs?
That's what a great question. It's as if we actually planned these. Okay. So it depends on the device and how is it actually communicating? What protocol is it using? So well, if it's a device that can
protocol, that's what I'm asking.
Well, and okay, so I'm using protocol in different ways. There's the Matter protocol, but then there's also, is it Bluetooth or Wi-Fi? Or is it something else? So if it's using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi and the rest of your setup can support communication over those standards, then you're okay. But if it's something that uses its own proprietary communication system to get everything back in to the whole communication circle, then you're probably still going to need that bridge device. So, for example, if you have like the older Wemo smart plugs.
Yeah.
Those needed to have a bridge to handle part of the communication thing.
Right.
But all the Wemo smart plugs that you buy today, everything they do, they can just do straight over your Wi-Fi connection.
Sure.
And so if those switches support Matter, then you're set. There's no bridge needed.
So I guess so for Hue, the question would be whether or not they're building in the necessary chips into the bulb to support Matter directly from the bulb, as opposed to making it so that the bulb still has to communicate with a hub that actually handles the Matter interactions.
Well, it's more about what's the wireless transceiver in the Hue bulb, and is it communicating with a protocol that your primary bridge or hub for your network, your HomePod, your Apple TV, your iPhone, whatever it is, your Echo, if that has the correct communication protocol as opposed to the smart home platform protocol, so separate from Matter, then you're set. So in that sense, an Echo device will give you more device compatibility without bridges than, say, an Apple TV or a HomePod. And that's because Echo devices have the, I think it's a Zigbee platform that Hue bulbs use. And so if you don't have that built into the device, it's going to actually bridge you out to everything else, then you're still going to need that custom bridge. So yes, this will help cut down on the number of bridges people need, but at least for the near future, it won't eliminate them.
Well, so to me, needing a bridge is a friction point for consumers. And it is, to me, in the best interest of manufacturers to stop making their accessories reliant on a bridge.
I agree. And at the same time, there are a lot of device makers out there that are probably crunching numbers in spreadsheets to see if it's actually worth the money to change their hardware so that it doesn't need a bridge.
Well, and that's going to, I mean, like, market forces could determine that. Market forces could find or could result in companies that don't make that change finding that their devices aren't selling at all. So it's either change or perish.
Right. Right. But there's the other part of that, which is it going to matter to end users? And by that, I mean, are people going to be interested enough in buying devices with Matter support that it becomes important for device makers to make sure they're actually really supporting Matter?
And that's going to probably, somewhat ironically, depend on how much these platforms actually embrace their own shared system/protocol. Yeah, I mean, like, mm-hmm. you know, if for instance, Apple supports it, but Apple never says anything about it, you know, might not gain much much of a foothold in the Apple ecosystem. Same thing with Google or Amazon, et cetera.
Right. And but then add into that, let's say that you're looking at these devices that support Matter, and you need something that can handle that protocol, and you have a Wi-Fi router, base station in your house. Does it support Matter? Does it not?
Right.
Do you need to get a new one?
Do you need your Wi-Fi or mesh networking gear to support Matter?
Okay. Here's one place where it's a little bit murky for me. And if I were to take the time to research it more, I could give you the definitive answer. I believe that if your Wi-Fi router supports Matter, then it makes it easier to just do the whole bridging thing and do the setup. And if you don't, then there are more steps involved in the setup process. For example, like Eero, they are going to make sure through software updates that I think all of the base stations that they have made will have Matter support built in. So, you know, then it acts like the go-between for setup and stuff. So as we get more devices that can support Matter, then it becomes easier for adoption to happen. And so it'll be interesting, I think, to watch and see how quickly that happens, or if it ends up stalling because there's not enough happening with Matter development in one area, and then everyone else is like, I'm not going to support it until I see more.
Right.
And they don't see more because they're not supporting it.
Okay. Now, all that said, you mentioned several minutes ago the benefits for consumers, but there is a benefit for accessory makers too, and that benefit is that if they meet the Matter standard, their device will now work on all of the Matter platforms.
Yes. So it gives you the opportunity to make one device,
one and done,
that works everywhere.
Yeah. And that's obviously, I mean, that's should, or at least could reduce development time, reduce the number of things that have to be included in the device, et cetera. It should make things easier, which again is going to further make it easier for consumers too. So let's hope that that this becomes a thing. I think we will all, I think everyone who's interested in a smart home will benefit from Matter becoming a thing.
I hope so. I mean, I am cautiously optimistic. And the reason I'm cautiously optimistic is because we can look back through history and see all these places where these incredibly promising technologies and standards have popped up and then just died because they couldn't get the support that they needed.
Right.
I'm more hopeful here because Apple, Google, and Amazon are all on board with this.
And they are the biggest players in the market with a lot, you know, alongside, I suppose, what's the one you just mentioned? Zigbee. And
which has been around for a long time.
Is there another platform too? Another independent-ish?
Yes. And Z-Wave, is that it?
Yeah, that's the one. By the way, go ahead.
Voice. I wanted to talk quickly about voice also.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
This is one place where I'm concerned that it might be frustrating at first for consumers because the whole Matter protocol, voice isn't part of it yet.
Oh.
Meaning there's no standardization about how the voice part is going to work. So if I'm understanding where it will be at launch, it means that device makers need to make sure that whatever they're doing with the software for their own devices supports the various voice platforms. So
that makes sense.
So you may be able to like set up and control something through whatever platform, but it doesn't necessarily mean that controlling it through voice is going to work the way you expect. I'm hoping that it's actually a lot easier than that. But since there is no voice part of the Matter standard yet, I am a little concerned.
Fair enough. I also, or unrelated, vaguely related, tangentially related, I had a thought occur to me while we were talking about this.
Sweet.
So do you know how I've been talking about like the relative smartness of changing out dumb switches for smart switches instead of like individual light bulbs?
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying that this would be better because now you're not having to worry about setting up each light bulb, and you're also not having to worry about changing out each light bulb when it comes to replacing them. You don't have to change them out in your smart home system. Mm-hmm. But there is a downside, and that downside. There's a negative in that if one of the things you're trying to set up in a particular room are multicolored, an all color light, mm-hmm. you cannot do that through a smart switch.
Yes, that is true.
The smart switches are a smart switch can do on and off, and depending on the switch and your actual bulbs, can turn those bulbs up and down in terms of brightness. But they mm-hmm. cannot control color from the switch.
Right. At that point, you're switching over to
individual bulbs.
Smart bulbs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that wasn't something that had occurred to me before. And I think it's mainly because I don't have any multicolored bulbs in this house. And that was what was guiding all of that stuff.
You know, when I started with smart home stuff, or when I got to the point where I was ready to start messing with smart bulbs, mm-hmm. I started with plain white bulbs. And it was a great way to get into it because it didn't cost as much money, and bulbs cost more at that point.
Yeah.
And it was simple, and I could play with it and figure out what I liked. And then I started messing with the color bulbs, and you get one color bulb, and now you've got a taste of it. And the next thing you know, you're just buying a bunch of colored bulbs.
Right.
And yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. So just in case, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now about LinkedIn Jobs. And here's the thing. LinkedIn Jobs is the world's largest professional network with over 770 million people. It's LinkedIn. That's amazing. And LinkedIn Jobs is a way for you to find the right people to work for you. You can focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, and you can use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified candidates. Then you can use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. And they give you a great interface for managing not only your job postings, but managing the people who have expressed interest in that job posting. And it's one place where you can manage the whole thing. It makes a lot of sense. It's easy to use. And you've got access to all those people. It is a very, very good way, especially right now, when a lot of hiring is being done remotely and a lot of jobs are being done remotely. LinkedIn Jobs can be a fantastic way for you to find the right people to fill the jobs at your company. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster Every week, for instance, nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. You should absolutely check this out. LinkedIn Jobs, it's good stuff. Terms and conditions do apply, and I appreciate them sponsoring this week's episode of the Apple Context Machine. Jeff Gamet.
Brian Chaffin.
We're going to turn the tables. Our first topic was me learning from you. And the second topic is one you probably aren't all that interested in.
So what you're saying is the show's all about you.
Yeah, it's all about me. Well, but I mean, isn't every show?
Well, to be all fair, about me? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a thing. All right. So here's the deal. Right now we're in this crypto down market. Like, I'm not going to call it a bear market. For one thing, bear markets have actual definitions, and I'm not sure if we've actually crossed into an actual bear market, but it certainly is down. And the world of crypto has a whole lot of people who, you know, think that they can or want to be, at least be able to get rich quick, or I don't know, whatever. And that's not my thing with crypto. And after talking about this with some folks out here in the real world, I thought that maybe we could talk about what my interest is in crypto in a down market and how I look at it. What do you think?
I would love that, especially because first, it's all about you. Now, especially because when I'm looking at the whole crypto space, I equate it in, at least in my mind, to the stock market. Because you know, there's up and down, and you have to know when to get in and sell, or am I thinking about it incorrectly?
Well, you, there's a couple different ways. That's a very insightful question, because especially when it comes to the thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the kinds of cryptos that interest me. Companies, generally speaking, like the stock market is at least loosely tied to what a company does or makes and whether or not they're profiting from doing so. Right. Mm-hmm. And the crypto markets are different. You know, there's often not a company behind a particular crypto at all. Sometimes there is, but oftentimes it's an organization instead. It's not a company at all. Or if it is a company, it's a company in name, but really you still got this broader community of people who are looking to do stuff. And from that standpoint, it differs. But then the way you actually asked your question was really about like knowing when to buy and sell and stuff. And from that standpoint, yeah, it's very analogous to the stock market. Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
yeah. So enlighten me.
Well, I'm going to try. There are so-called meme coins where the so-called value of the crypto is because it has become a meme. I'm not interested in that. And I am not interested in people who think that I'm not interested in the kind of thinking that says that if you're investing in this meme coin because it's going to be hot, you can make some money. Yeah, maybe you will. You probably won't. And that's not, that's gambling. It's not investing. Okay. And it's not even, I don't know what it is, but it's not an investment. It's gambling. Which is fine. If that's what you want to do, that's great. I own some Dogecoin. I've had Dogecoin for many, 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 many years. I've got some Bitcoin too. I've got Cardano. I've got some Dot, Polkadot, that is. I've got several cryptos. For that matter, I own some shares in Apple too. So when you're in a down market, I look at those, I look at it dips in the market as an opportunity to buy. There's a phrase that became popularized. I don't know if it actually started in the stock world or if this was definitely like purely a crypto invention, but it's BTFD, which is buy the effing dip. Right?
Okay.
So, you know, like, you know, people, and I think basically where it came from is like people wringing their hands. Like, oh my God, you know, this or that coin is down. And then, you know, the people who have a long-term outlook would basically, you know, just get tired of saying buy the dip. So it became buy the effing dip.
And okay. Just so you know, yeah. Effing starts with an E, not an F. So shouldn't it be B-E-T-D?
Do not make me come over there. Do not.
This is why I'm glad that there's the glass panel on between the sides of the, yeah. the recording the studio.
Of course. All right. So here's the thing. I am very much, I know we've talked about this before. I'm a hodler, H-O-D-L, hodl. It is a joke. It stands for hold on for dear life. I'm personally convinced that it was a typo. Someone, you know, probably on Reddit, they meant to type hold and they typed hodl instead. And so as a joke, they came up with the definition for it. But it basically means that it's the idea of holding on for the long term. Mm-hmm. In general, when people ask me about day trading stocks or cryptos, I, you know, depending on who it is, do my best to basically point out that, you know, most day traders go broke. And part of that is because you're competing against people with like in the stock world, you're competing against hedge funds that have sometimes put, you know, millions or tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars into developing automated systems designed to screw you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not an advocate or fan of day trading at all. And that goes for cryptos. It goes for stocks, whatever. For me, the cryptos that I've bought are ones that I'm holding and I'm going to hold. And the reason why I'm holding them is because they most of them at the very least do something. They solve a problem or they add functionality to the world in some way. I'm talking about things like Cardano, which is one of my absolute favorites and is way, way down these days. And even Ethereum, Solana, Polkadot, like all the Fetch is, we've talked about Fetch. I love the idea of software agents and I love the idea of software agents on a blockchain. Fetch is super interesting to me, even if it's way early in the world of Fetch and Fetch can't do most of the things yet that they're trying to do. It's super interesting. I hope that they can do it. So the stock of the cryptos that I put any money into, or even if I'm trading like one crypto for another, tend to be these cryptos that actually do something. And if they're actually going to do something or doing something now, I want to hold them because I believe that they will become more valuable over time. That is essentially my philosophy. So when,
okay,
go ahead.
So we're, and maybe I'm about to ask exactly what you were getting ready to talk about. We'll see. So we're in this, this down market for crypto right now.
Yeah.
Is there a point where you're looking at the state of the market and the various cryptocurrencies that you're holding and you need to decide to get rid of specific currencies?
I personally am not going to be getting rid of a currency because of its price. The only reason why I'm going to sell or trade one of my crypto holdings is because I no longer believe in that crypto. because I don't okay. I don't care what a crypto does in the next week, the next month, the next year, really even the next few years. I'm a lot more interested in what's going to be going on with that crypto in 5 or 10 or 20 years. Right? So mm-hmm. the price is never going to make me sell. The price might make me buy. Like, I tend to buy on the way down in a market. And if the market keeps going down below the point where I bought into it, I do not regret my decision to buy into it. I just might find myself wishing I had more dollars to buy more.
Okay. So that would be an optimistic look at how you expect the crypto value to change over time. And then, of course, you recoup your investment and then make more on it.
Yeah, possibly. I might also lose everything. I mean, there is a non-trivial chance that Bitcoin will be worth nothing tomorrow. Like, as we're recording this right now, something awful could be happening that could cause the crypto markets to lose all of the value. That is a risk, and it is a risk with most stocks too. It's probably less of a risk with most stocks, but I accept that risk. Everybody is wired differently. Some people cannot stand to see the value of their portfolio decreasing in terms of dollars. So, like, for instance, they bought $1,000 worth of crypto, and then mm-hmm. maybe that crypto increased, and so now their portfolio was worth $1,500. And mm-hmm. then everything drops in value, and now all of a sudden their portfolio is worth $800, and they're freaking out. Right? That, mm-hmm. that some people are like that. I'm not like that. I don't care about the decrease of value from $1,500 to $800, because I'm actually a lot more interested several years from now when that same portfolio might well be worth $5,000 or $4,000 or $2,000 or whatever. I don't care about the short-term movements. And I look at downturns as an opportunity to buy. Now, again, I want to stress this. That's the way I am wired. You may be wired differently. And I told a friend of mine this week, if you do not like seeing the value of your crypto holdings go down, you may want to get out of owning any cryptocurrency, because it's going to fluctuate. That's
reasonable. Yeah. Same thing for stocks.
Yeah.
I would assume.
Well, yeah. Okay. And the funny thing there, though, before you move on, is that we've been in a bull market for so long in the stock market. A lot of people don't understand that their stocks could go down in value. Like, that's going to be a real comeuppance for some folks when come the day that there is some kind of a major correction in the stock markets. A lot of people may be freaking out because they just thought that their stocks would always magically be worth more.
Mm-hmm.
And it is possible for a company to go under. It is possible for the world economy to collapse, or for there to be a hiccup, or to have a recession or a depression. Those things are possible. We could even have a pandemic that radically slows things down around the entire globe. Believe it or not, that could happen.
That sounds like crazy talk, and it's really scary.
No, it is very scary. So you were going to say something.
I was going to ask you about companies that are creating their own cryptos. And what happens if that company goes out of business?
Well,
is your crypto investment just gone?
It depends. There's a whole lot about the crypto world that is supposed to be decentralized, meaning that no one entity controls it. That's a lot of the crypto market. But there are some cryptocurrencies that are not decentralized. Some of them, they're not decentralized on purpose. Some of them, they're not decentralized just because, whatever company behind it doesn't get it. Mm-hmm. Always make sure you're researching what you're doing. But if a crypto is properly decentralized, the company that originally started it going out of business wouldn't necessarily affect its value or utility. And I mean, it also kind of depends on, like, you know, how much of it is open source, how much of it is proprietary. If it's a proprietary, if there's proprietary stuff on the blockchain, the company goes under, it's probably doomed. But there aren't a lot. I mean, like, there certainly are some cryptos, especially the cryptos that are like that are working to solve some of the deficiencies of Ethereum by, you know, either making it faster or as a way of reducing fees, transaction fees for on the Ethereum chain, things like that. There are companies behind some of those, but it really does depend on a lot more on some broader ecosystem things.
Okay, so if I make Jeff Coin and it takes off and is doing great, but it gets hit by the downward trend in the market, and it goes back down and comes back up, and it goes through the cycles like normal, and then I find that I could actually build my own rocket and leave Earth, and I'm just gone forever. As long as I set up my crypto correctly, it will carry on even while I'm gone.
It could carry on even while you're gone. But if a lot of the value was based upon the magic of Jeff leaving the planet could have a deleterious effect on the value of and utility of that crypto.
Oh, that's a good point. So really, for Jeff Coin, I have a responsibility to all the people buying into it. I need to stick around for them.
Yes. 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 Precisely. Sure.
Okay.
Let's go with that. Okay. So I guess another thing I would say to anyone who's interested in this sort of thing is do your due diligence, understand what you're buying before you buy it. Right. You know, I'm interested in Fetch.ai. Because it's software agents on a blockchain. Software agents can make autonomous decisions and interact with other autonomous software agents. That is super interesting to me. But it's super early. It's way early in their development. There's a whole lot of stuff that doesn't exist yet on that blockchain. I went to go learn about all this before I bought any Fetch. And I also happen to already know some things about software agents before I did this.
Okay. All right. So what I'm hearing is, you should be getting commissions by helping everyone else out with their crypto purchases, because of course that seems totally legit, right?
Yeah, no, in no way whatsoever. The funny thing, by the way, is
to be clear, everyone, I was making a joke.
One of the things that Fetch does is allows people who make a software agent, if their software agent that they've released onto the blockchain gets used in a transaction. So in other words, if another software agent needed to use your software agent to complete the transaction, you would end up getting a share of the transaction fees. So it's a way of encouraging developers to make these very useful software agents for other people to be able to utilize. Super interesting.
Now, it really is. And I don't remember if I brought this up when we were talking about Fetch initially, but it sounds to me like a technology that fits beautifully with the idea of Apple's Knowledge Navigator concept. You have that device that goes out there and is just handling all of these different things for you. So, you know, maybe it's setting up a meeting. Maybe it's handling a stock or a crypto purchase for you, whatever. Or
airline tickets.
Or airline tickets.
Yeah, right. That's one of my go-to examples for a software agent. So imagine, you know how like Kayak, for instance, Kayak will go and look at all of the different travel agent sites for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And but it's going to present this barrage of information. You still have to sort through it. And you also still had to set up the search parameters to begin with. Okay, but what if you had a software agent that could determine not what the cheapest flight is to fly on Tuesday, but to determine whether or not it was cheaper to fly on Tuesday versus Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's super useful to have someone, to have software doing the research and figuring that out for you, and then be able to secure the tickets for you as well. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be super duper useful and is way more useful than the barrage of information you get from all of these different apps that are, you know, essentially polling all of the travel agent services and sites, and then again presenting you this big barrage of information. I mean, it is nifty in many ways that Kayak does what it does, but mm-hmm. it's not the end state of goodness when it comes to buying tickets to anything or hotels or, you know, like whatever it is. And there's a lot like if you had a software agent that would buy you an airline ticket and a hotel the second a pre-championship game was determined. So like, you know, there's finals, right? And let's mm-hmm. say in for a sport where the games are actually played in the participants' hometowns, as opposed to like the Super Bowl, which is in a designated city. So you could have a software mm-hmm. agent that went and secured your ticket the second the final score was known for one team or the other or whatever. I mean, like, there's just a whole lot of things that autonomous software agents could do for us. And I was, you mentioned the Knowledge Navigator. I learned about software agents as a concept in the late 90s. And I've been, you know, they've been right up there with the jetpack and the flying car for me. Like, where are my software agents? I want my software agents.
To me, the software agents are more exciting than jetpacks and flying cars.
Well, they would have,
because they would do so much more for me.
Yeah, more of a practical impact. Software agent could find you every article that has Jeff Gammon in it. Or even better.
That seems like a really useful.
I've got a better use.
Even better?
They could find you every article that has Brian Chaffin in it. Way more useful.
I guess.
Or that has the mention of a company. Or that has some your favorite word, like let's say your favorite word is prestidigitator, and mm-hmm. you just love reading articles where someone mentions a prestidigitator or prestidigitation, right? I mean, yeah, Google can do that to a certain extent, but a software agent could actively be looking, constantly scouting for those, and then present them to you.
Yeah, what a great research tool.
Yeah.
You know, just have these software agents that are constantly sifting through everything they can find on the internet to find specific data that you need.
Yeah. And there, I mean, a bot, there are buying bots. There are bots that will buy things on Amazon or buy things on eBay and stuff like that. I mean, bots are not software agents. They're not autonomous and they're not, you know, semi-intelligent. A software agent.
They're basically if-then loops.
Right. A software agent could be so much smarter. And I'm sure that software agents would be absolutely unleashed on, you know, what's the term? What's the term when you're trying to leverage market inefficiencies?
Optimization?
No. There's a financial term for it where it's not leveraging. It's it's where like it, take a currency, the dollars or euros or something, and one market in Japan is buying and selling dollars for or buying and selling euros for a buck and a half, and another market is buying and selling euros for a buck 20. So you want to go buy all the euros you can for a buck 20 and then transfer them over to this other market and sell them for a buck 50. Arbitrage. That's the word.
Oh, right.
Right. Yep. So I'm sure that software agents will be turned into arbitrage machines and pretty quickly. Which is
that seems reasonable.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Well, I mean, at any place that a technology can be used to give a company or a person a significant advantage, you know it's going to happen. And the whole financial space seems ripe for software agents.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very much so. But it could actually democratize, like what I was talking about earlier, the hedge funds spending lots and lots of money to develop systems that one of the things that they do, it's high speed trading, high speed. There's a full term for it. Stock market, high speed.
Top men.
High speed. Yeah. High speed trading. Anyway. So it's where these hedge funds will stick servers in the same data center as the exchanges are using and basically mm-hmm. use that fraction of a second advantage they have to buy and sell stocks right ahead of the order that you already placed.
Yeah.
And, you know, screwing you in the process. And
that's why my yeah came out that way.
They can do this because they have the financial resources to buy the brain power and, you know, the server capacity to make all that happen. Software agents could, you know, like democratize some of that and, you know, make it so that the hedge funds have to find another way to screw us.
Well, they just need to make sure that their systems running their software agents are closer in the server rack to
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more that software agents can do, and it's why I'm so excited about Fetch. But again, I just want to emphasize this one last time. It's possible that Fetch will never be able to do what it is that the developers hope that and plan for it to do. But I am certainly hopeful and I can't wait to see. And those are the kinds of cryptos that I'm interested in. Things that actually do something, with the exception of Bitcoin, because I do own some Bitcoin too. And Bitcoin is most likely to remain a store of value versus something that has all kinds of utility value that's solving major problems.
Okay. You know, I love how this discussion went from talking about crypto in a down market for crypto and evolved into something that we both find very exciting, which is the possibility of real software agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. So with that in mind, Jeff, I think that we should save our heretofore unmentioned third topic for our next show. By the way, what are you doing next? What are you doing next week?
Hold on. Let me look at my calendar right now. And well, I bet we can work something out.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Let's see here. First of all, Jeff, let me do this thing that I like to do, which is... that. And then let me make it clear that it is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boone, recorded just for TMO. Our sponsor this week was LinkedIn Jobs. And once again, you can go to linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And Jeff, tell us where our listeners can find you.
How about on Twitter and Instagram? I'm Jay Gamut on both. And youtube.com/JayGamut for the videos I make. And Thursdays, I am the interim host for the big show. And on Fridays, I'm the interim host for the Mac show. I kind of get around.
You do.
And, yeah. Oh, did you know that I set up Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee?
No. Excellent.
Yeah, if people just want to throw me money because whatever, I'm Jay Gamut on both of those too.
Okay, I'll include a link to that in the show notes as well. And very much appreciate it. And on that happy note, Jeff.